Good morning. Today is Monday, the 4th of March. A buddy of mine's birthday. Huh. He's B positive blood. So everybody this morning was, you know, March 4th, B positive.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. Brian Stevens from EPD is with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. Who's running the store today?
Commander LaFrance is there right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Somebody's got to be backfilling when the big boy's gone, right?
Yeah, but the phone's never far from the hand, so it can always be...
Or elbow in this
be
case.
Be found,
huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. All right. You ready for your gauntlet?
Give it to me.
All right. Oh, no, we did that one. Why do we say I heard it through the grapevine? Or sing it, if you're a fan of 60s music.
I don't know. You said we did this one. Is this like a challenge?
No, the one before was okay. turned a blind eye.
All right.
I just hadn't made note on it.
God, I know I'm getting old, but I don't remember that one. heard it through the grapevine because maybe back in times, grapes vines were used to divide property lines. So you would hear your neighbors talking through the grapevine.
Okay. It starts out during the American Civil War. At least that kind of gets in the neighborhood, huh, where you grew up. A Colonel B set up a crude telegraph line between Placerville and Virginia City by stringing wires from trees. The wire hung in loops like wild grapevines, and so the system was called the Grapevine Telegraph, or simply the Grapevine. Oh, maybe that's where it comes from for the L.A. area, too. Yeah. Boom. We continue. By the time war news came through the wires, it was often outdated, misleading, or false. And the expression, I heard it through the grapevine, soon came to describe any information obtained through gossip or rumor that was likely unreliable. You guys got a couple of grapevines coming into the shop, don't you?
Yes. Usually do.
So any weather-related weirdness going on for you?
There was plenty of weather-related incidents this weekend. So,
But nothing... Nothing worthy of note or nothing that hasn't been filed yet that is worthy of note?
Yeah, just a lot of traffic collisions and people off the roadway. I think, what was it?
Even in town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what was it, Friday night or whatever, we had the huge tree apparently blew down across Boone.
Oh, yeah, down the bottom of Booner Hill there.
Yeah. So that caused a bunch of power outages and some issues. So, I mean, nothing. People just need to slow down. When the white stuff starts hitting the ground and on the coast, just... Slow down or don't drive at all, please.
You mean don't be stupid?
Just slow down or don't drive at all. I don't care what kind of car you have, all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
When it comes down that fast, and you just need to slow down or stop.
Well, that was one of the things Paul Kraft was on Thursday. We were talking about hail.
Yeah.
Shock and awe that we had hail right after that. But it's like, okay, you have zero contact with the road. It doesn't matter how thick the hail is. You're on little ice boxes.
Yeah, and what's unique about that is you can literally go around a corner, go from rain to hail, and the road be white, and now you're at speed and, you know, you have no control over. That's something that's just really unique. You know, I was driving early Saturday morning and on a stretch of 101, it was fine. Went, you know, another 150 yards, next thing you know, the roads are completely covered in white. And if you overreact to that, then you find yourself in a slide or whatever, and... So just knowing the weather, I mean, the Weather Service, National Weather Service, OES, put out a lot of information about the storm coming in, and really just need to slow down and be careful out there.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of us really appreciate the concept of microclimates until you see something like that. And it's almost like there's a line in the road.
Yeah.
And one spot it's this way and one spot it's that way. I can remember... Go up to Brookings weekly. There's a spot just as you come in at Damnation Creek is where. Boy, and that was always snow. Either side, dry. Yeah. And you just, okay, so there's some kind of an updraft going on here, and it just is. And, you know, after a period of time, the consistency is there. And I would suspect that that's part of the challenge when it becomes so unique. Is that we don't have a chance to develop those areas. I mean, if you knew that, let's say, the bottom of Booner Hill was consistently, that was a cold spot, it was going to be an issue, okay, here comes a storm, you'd know how to prep for it. But, you know, the half-life, it's all probably gone already. So how do you anticipate some of these things?
Yeah, the surprise with the hail is generally the biggest issue. It's not like you can prepare for, okay, I'm going to drive over 299 this weekend. I know I need chains. I know when I get to Lord Ellis, it's going to be snowy. I know when I get past, what's that, Panther Creek at the bottom of between the two mountains. You know, I know it's going to start getting snowy again when I start going up. You still have that opportunity with hail. You know, there are a couple places in Eureka, you know, Fairway Drive, Campton, at the city limits. You know, when it's cold outside, there's going to be frost on those two sections of road before anywhere else. And so we see a lot of traffic collisions out there. But you're right, the surprise, the shock, you don't recognize it. You don't believe it's going to happen. And it can be a sunny day in one part of town, and literally you drive south a half mile and you could be stuck in a hailstorm. So
that to me was part of the cool part. I mean, it looked like spring weather.
I think it's cool. But
yeah.
So you have to go handle some of that stuff out in it.
Yeah,
until
you see
somebody, Saturday night,
somebody's car pointing the wrong direction or, you know, issues, that kind of stuff. Were there a lot of medicals as part of this, or just cars that bumped and slid and that kind of stuff?
We had one on Saturday night that was bad. Most of them might just run off the roadway.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's an almost good.
I appreciate just the running off the roadway and get stuck versus some of the stuff we have to deal with, yeah.
Will your troops try to help people out of those off the roads, or is that the tow company roaring around all over the place?
Yeah, that's the tow company. We get sent to them just to do welfare checks, make sure there's no injuries, make sure they have help on the way, or if they're far enough off the road or not far enough off the road, then provide some type of...
You push them the rest of the way?
Try to keep the roadway clear, but try to keep them, you know, a buffer for them to stay safe so that the tow truck can get in and get them pulled out, okay?
I would think that is even more of a complicator if you got somebody's back end hanging out in the lane.
Yeah.
And now there's a little bit of hail or a little bit of rain or now the people coming on have a little less wiggle room too.
Yeah, it's challenging. We always try to create an environment where we can isolate the incident and create a safe space to work in. So just be patient with us when we do that, because sometimes that requires us to shut down lanes and other things.
Buy more flares.
Yeah, we used quite a bit.
I would suspect that the stockade is a little empty today. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens. March typically is what for EPD?
As far as weather, as far as work.
Just activities. I would think that everybody has their trends. Okay, you go back 10 years and you go, okay, ding, ding, ding. This happens in February. This happens in August. This happens in March. What does a normal March look, or okay, wait, typical March look like for you guys?
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever looked at it like that. I mean, obviously we've talked before in the past about certain times of year you'll see trends around Christmas with more homebergs and vehicle bergs because of Christmas presents, things like that. Summer times, people on vacation, not home. March, I mean, we have Paddy's Day. That's going to be, you know, that'll be an extra night for us to be cognizant of what's going on. And
are there a lot of people who are 1% Irish?
There's a lot of people that love to enjoy St. Paddy's Day, whether they're Irish or not.
The bars and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the restaurants, bars. It's a good time. I think that's on the I think that's on the 17th, right?
Oh, you said that about as droll as you possibly could.
It's a good time. I think it's on the 17th.
Yeah, it's the Ides of March or the 15th. Yeah. You don't get them confused.
So, and then we have the Perilous Plunge. So, we know we're starting our event season. So, Yeah, it's
you jumping in?
No.
Not intentionally.
I've not, yeah, and I don't float well, so not going to jump in the bay. So it's kind of that ramp up. You know, it's kind of nice for us. There's not a lot going on for events right now because the summer is going to be, again, extremely busy for us to help cover between the Thursday night concerts, Friday night markets, and other events that come to Eureka, and it's great that they do. And so it's nice for our people to, I mean, we're really working hard on patrol right now, dealing with a lot of issues. Trying to rework the warming centers this weekend to get people in off the street out of some of this weather.
Did they open those?
We opened, I know the OES opened some throughout the county, and then we opened ours, I believe, last two nights now.
Okay, that used to be a big whoop-de-whoop, a lot of discussion. Where's it going to be? How's it going to be? Is it now kind of just process?
Yeah, we've worked a lot of that out over the, we'll call it the off-season, with different locations, volunteers, the city of Eureka, some of the programs that we already have between CARE and Uplift, and then our CSET team. And so they generally will go out and seek out people that are in bad shape on those nights and try to encourage them to come with them to take them out to the warming center for the night. So
I saw your fancy new truck. It said Uplift on the side of it.
Oh, yeah. They got...
They got money somewhere.
Oh, they get grants.
That was an EPD, wasn't it?
No, they get grants for a lot of the programs they run. So that allows them to have the vehicles that help us move those that have a lot of property from location to location.
Oh, so there's not a trailer, though, yet?
No, we don't have a trailer.
Yeah. What triggers for you or the department to move some of the encampments out? You know, there's a spot, the plateau, if you will, below Silvercrest. Okay, and they were there, and then things got shuffled around a little bit. Okay, and now they're in that square, I guess maybe catty corner.
Like
down on the sides, all around below. What is it below? I guess the Renner.
Yeah.
The card lock there and across from another familiar place for them. How long until you are told to move them out?
It's not as much as when we're asked to move people along. It's the availability of those that we have that can actually go out and engage and do what needs to do.
Oh, so it's a staffing?
It's a staffing issue. We're working really close with parks right now because, you know, if the officers, CSET officers generally that go out and tag camps and try to get people the resources they need, and when it comes to they're not either cooperating or they leave trash behind, we don't want to spend officers' time just picking up trash. And we still have to because there's just not enough resources to get it done. And when we do move people out or we do make an arrest and things need to be cleaned up, we don't want to leave it because then it gets drug on to different properties or different transient camps. I mean, I think in January, they picked up somewhere around 16,000 pounds of trash, just the cops did.
Where does it come from? That's all not plastic bags and cardboard boxes from the grocery store.
It's not. I mean, they'll collect anything. Anybody sits anything out on the side of the road, says free or throws in the trash can, home goods, whatever. I mean, lamps, things they have a lot of times have no real purpose for because they don't have power, but they'll still take it to their camps.
The stuff that people leave on the sidewalks?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they'll pick up anything. And no matter how fast we can get to them and declare it to be trash or abandon property and get rid of it, they were out collecting the same time we're doing that. So the one thing we're really having an issue with and we really would like to see companies begin to really work on helping us with, and that is pallets. Pallets create a huge issue for us. They're used by those in transient camps to build, you know, full-blown structures. And then the cleanup of those is extremely hard just because of the weight alone and trying to get them out of some of the places they have plenty of time to drag them to. We don't have the resources to get in there. So, we're working on Humble Bay Fire. Would love to have pallets to do training in their firebox and things. And so we're trying to work with the city right now and work with some businesses. If you have them and want to get rid of them, there's going to be a process by which you can contact the city, and we'll have staff for Humble Bay Fire. We'll come and collect those. So, you know, don't put them out on the sidewalk and put free. There's actually an ordinance within the city that says you have to secure and maintain pallets so they're not available.
Really, a pallet-specific ordinance?
Yeah. So we don't want to go down necessarily the road of enforcement. We're looking for some cooperation and trying to find a different outlet for you if you can't get rid of them, that we can absolutely use them and use them for a good cause for training. So, we're looking for some help from our businesses, local businesses on that matter.
Do a lot of folks know that they can turn them in?
We're working on that messaging right now, yeah.
It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens. Part of the Brian Brigade, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just noticed the proliferation of us.
It was a common name back in the day, I guess.
I guess. Or there's a bunch of young ones that are running around with the name.
Yeah.
But, you know, then they have the Y thing, which is really, sorry, doesn't count. You're something else. Has dealing with homeless transients, and I suppose now with the illegals, almost a subspecialty within law enforcement? What you can, what you can't, how you can, how you can't?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why we have a dedicated team to it because, one, under some of the new changes in laws, we have to be very careful on how we do it and what we do. We have an ordinance that helps identify and clarify some of that. And the Supreme Court is hearing that again this spring. So hopefully what's coming out of Medford will get heard by the Supreme Court and maybe there'll be a change of that Ninth Circuit.
Well, Medford has got something?
Yeah, I think it was Medford that got it to go all the way through and it has to do with the Boise, Idaho ruling about camping and people have the right. So that's actually being heard in the Supreme Court so they could actually overrule the Ninth Circuit and maybe change some of those that have really tied cities' hands on how they deal with enforcement of those issues. So, yeah, so it's you got to have that balance of enforcement and compassion still because there are truly people out there that need assistance. You know, it's somebody, I know Chief Jarvis broke it down for me once, but somebody broke it down for him. You have the have-nots, and those are the people that, unfortunately, due to circumstances, maybe out of their control, lost their job, different things that just are down on their luck and are trying to do the best they can. But they'll take assistance if you can give it to them. If you can find them a house, if you can find them a job, they're happy to help and work. Then you have the those have-nots, the can-nots, and those are people who are suffering, our community members suffering from mental illness, drug addiction. They just don't have the capabilities to function in
it's
society
just not there. Yeah.
Without the assistance. And they don't know how to get the assistance, so sometimes, you know, through different avenues, we have to force that assistance upon them. And then you have your will-nots, and that's that generational transient that has been here forever. It has a criminal element to it. It just chooses to be out there and chooses to cause some of the issues we have in our green belts and along our trails. And that's the piece where, you know, the enforcement's going to have to change that behavior usually is the will-nots because they just won't take resources and they won't usually cooperate with anything we try to do to assist.
With the folks that are, I guess, mentally not all there. That probably gets me in trouble too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. You said that a lot of them are unaware that there are services that are available, but once they get into it, do they stay?
So there are some that do. And when I mean unaware, it's just they don't have necessarily
or they haven't
the
experienced
mental,
it yet.
They don't have the mental capacity to, like, realize that they're in trouble necessarily, realize there are things that could help them, and that's where that outreach comes through CSET Uplift, making that daily contact with them. Because sometimes in drug addiction, you got to hit rock bottom before you want help. But if you know that the help is there, we have people come to our door or we'll wave an officer down, the CSET officer's down, and be like, today's the day. Can you get me in somewhere? And we have that window of opportunity at that point where they're willing, and that's where we find the most success. Because you can beat your head against the wall on a lot of things. And until somebody says, I'm ready, then you have to make that move right then. So, you know, that's, and then the county plays into that, some, you know, with some of the mental illness issues and trying to conserve people, get them off the streets, because they just physically can't, mentally can't make those decisions for themselves. So we need to step in at some point to try to help and make that happen. And we have
Do the judges help? I mean, they have to be involved in the process somewhere.
There is a new, and I don't know enough about it. I kind of understand how it works, but there's a new process out there. It's got a specific name, and I apologize for not knowing. But
it's okay. It probably doesn't make sense to most of us.
There are people who the system can be brought before people in the system can be brought before a judge, and just because of the cost of service, the types of issues they're having, the mental illness, the drug addiction, the lack to be able to care for themselves, a judge can actually issue a warrant for them to bring them to court to force them into some type of treatment. And so we have to show great cause for that, and then there has to be a program behind it, and that's what this program does, is then try to get them into services and keep them connected. So people are trying. They're trying really hard and to make a difference. And I know the city of Eureka, you know, we're adding different housing. You know, the Betty Chin Village down in off Hilfiker is going in. I know there's some new housing or new, not housing per se, but some spots coming into Eureka that the city's going to set up and try to work. And that's what we're trying to do, is get a bed for every head. Because once we have that, then even if the law doesn't change to the Supreme Court, we can enforce the, you have a place to go, so you don't have to camp here today, that you're making a choice now. And because you're making this choice, but I could take you to somewhere, now I can actually enforce our ordinance that we have with the city and not get ourselves in trouble. With
so it does give you some flexibility at that point.
It does, yes.
As long as there's capacity.
It does. And then we just need to show we've tried. We need to show that we've had resources. We've reached out, how many contacts we've had, and lay that out. And, you know, the city's trying to hire an assistant city attorney right now. And part of that is prepping for, you know, how somebody to go to court on our behalf to deal with some of the issues the city faces and give us the opportunity, when appropriate, to use enforcement to try to change behavior.
How much of your staff time, I don't know, how many hours a week do you have?
For?
Total staff.
We got 24 patrol cops, 24 hours, whatever that.
Okay. 24 squared. That's not, okay. Like, I'm the one with a piece of paper here. 96. Okay, so roughly 1,000, 1,050 hours.
Yeah.
What percentage of that is taken up with homeless or homeless related? You know, these folks, of the three categories.
Yeah.
What percentage of their of your staff time is spent interacting with these folks? Any idea?
Well, you can think, at least consider the CSET sergeant, our MIST officer, our sworn park ranger, and even our park ranger, our community service officer park ranger. That's what they do 40 hours a week. That's, okay, so that is their job. So that's
20% of your staff.
Yeah, and then you know, the patrol handles all those calls that come in for, you know, the person yelling, walking down the road, man downs, we call them. So somebody drives by, somebody sees them in a doorway or laying on a sidewalk. You know, all those are, you know, turn out usually to be transit-related calls. And it's probably close to 50% of all our calls for service have some connection to those suffering from mental illness, drug addiction, or on the streets for whatever reason.
I wonder if the marketplace or the community is aware of how much. I mean, we see, we feel, but that's a black and white number. That's a significant black and white number.
Yeah, I mean, we could actually pull the numbers because we use a specific disposition code for transient-related or mental illness-related call, and it helps us track that. It helps us track those that are involved, and so we can keep those numbers we need sometimes to report out for different things, but also to use for enforcement. But definitely could track it, and maybe that's
something. Well, yeah, if it's an easy, just a click, and boom, there's a
yeah,
there's a number. It would be intriguing, I think. And I think the city council ought to be made aware of that stuff, too, you know, just as being the representatives of the city.
Yeah. I've been asked for a year-end report by our cop board, so maybe that's something I can add into that just to put a number to it. But we're getting ready to start our biannual. So every 2 years we do our own point-in-time count within the city of Eureka.
So I was wondering how many – I know there has been frustration by others in the department about – the tabulation process, you know, back when we had the RVs, the broken down
RV talent.
You know, you had to run formulas that may or may not have been accurate at all, but it was a foo-foo number. Do you kind of have a better idea of how many individuals there are?
Yeah, so in the city, Commander LaFrance has come up with a process where there's like a 15-20 questionnaire that gets loaded into like a SurveyMonkey onto Uplift, onto the CSET and others' phones. And for four or five weeks, they go out and make contact with people and ask these questions. And sometimes they can't answer all of them, but it really creates a huge data point for us as far as how long you've been here, how long you've been homeless, what's your drug of choice, do you suffer mental illness, have you been diagnosed, what kind of meds you take. It's all voluntary. You don't have to tell us if you don't want to. But in the end, we also get their names. So, and this is done at Free Meal. This is done on the trail. This is done with those cars that we see parked around town, RVs. So at the end, he goes through and then looks for any duplicates. So we do one-on-one contacts. We're not like saying, we're not driving by an RV and saying, well, that RV could hold 10 people. And there, so that's, we'll put 10 on our count. So I think what he told me the other day is generally you're around between 250 is about the average, 250 to 300 known individuals that they'll contact during this point in time count in the Eureka.
In Eureka?
Just in the city, in our jurisdiction, yes.
So does that include Cutton?
No.
Just, not that Cutton has an awful lot, but it really is city boundary to city boundary.
Yes.
Does the county and other cities take the same approach so there's consistency in trying to arrive at a number, or is there some that are a little bit more, oh, I'll use the word, but not meaning politically, a little bit more liberal or generous in how they do it?
Yeah, I'm not sure of any other cities that do it. I know that there is a point-in-time count that is done by the county. It is my understanding it's a little more generous than how they do it, so they don't make contact with everyone. If they see a tent somewhere, then there's a formula generally they'll come up with that they do that with. I have not been involved in that personally. This is all stuff has been told to me and relayed to me, so if it's inaccurate, then I'm just telling you up front that it's hearsay to me kind of stuff. But
is the sheriff department have to do that, or is that county?
No, I think it's county behavioral health or mental health, or
DHHS
works on that. Yeah.
Keep throwing letters out of it.
Yeah, it's one of those. Something will make sense. Probably a group of them.
You'll get close enough eventually. It's 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:50. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Brian Stevens. Brian, if businesses want more information, or if people want to volunteer for some of the stuff that you were talking about a little bit earlier, is it a complicated process to get involved? Do they just make a phone call? What can we do to help out the community without either mucking things up for you guys or putting ourselves into a situation where we're at risk?
Yeah, there are some opportunities through the city of Eureka to volunteer for cleanup days, and generally those will be advertised on the website. They're more controlled. They're more in the downtown area or in specific areas that, you know, are not necessarily in the green belts. And
picking up paper on 4th Street kind of
thing? Just beautifying, the inner city kind of thing. Some of the other stuff, there are organizations that will help us. There's some risk in just because of the type of stuff we clean up out in the camps, the hazmat issues. I believe there's some insurance things that have to be done. So I think it's a little more complicated to get out in that area.
But you don't have to go to that level to be of assistance.
Not at all. Not at all. Like I said, just follow the city's website or some of their social media stuff, and they have cleanup days all the time where they'll take a block and clean up. They'll do beautification and plant, new plants and things. And try to, get ready for, especially the summer season that's coming, just help beautify the city in any way. So there are some opportunities out there.
The old days when you got weeds in the gutter?
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem almost...
I wish it was that
almost
simple.
Almost like paradise, yeah.
I wish it was that simple anymore.
Is there still the needle exchange thing?
Yes.
Is it used?
Yes. It's not, it's mobile now within the city of Eureka. We don't have a brick and mortar location anymore. They'll come in. They have specific areas that they can come to on specific days to do that. And there are a lot of people that still utilize that service. And
What was the last time you heard that there were a number of hypodermic needles in gutters?
I don't see them personally in the gutters. I know people find them.
But it's more camps, periodically, right?
I honestly don't know, Brian. Okay. What happens on the street so much is, now feel more comfortable, I think, picking them up. We give out, the county gives out, the needle syringe cases so that you can safely put those, because a lot of businesses will clean up the areas in front of their business and stuff. Right. Or we're still seeing a large number of hypodermic syringes in the camps and in the green belts and the parks and places like that.
I wonder if that program in hindsight is deemed successful or not.
You can spend stats any way you want to spend stats.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of controversy about it, too, so that you have the emotional component as well as, the stats thing. But I just wonder, overall, thumbs up, thumbs down, was it worth the time, effort, and energy, or did it accomplish whatever the goal was that they were looking at, or is it just another failed attempt, which is okay. Just don't keep doing something if it's failed.
It's probably a little bit of both, a little bit of all of it. There's probably plays into the final outcomes will be a little bit of all of it.
So you are becoming political, aren't you? Have you voted yet?
I just need to drop it off. Yeah, I filled it out. I just need to drop it off.
Okay. So. Yeah. I dropped it off early. See everybody tomorrow.